Hi, this is Mark Talbot. I post his alt in a 20-foot radius.
Hi, this is Derek Myers. I post as Amaron at DungeonsMaster.com. And welcome to our podcast, Recounting Encounters.
A show where we talk about what happened at D&D Encounters this week. Hey everybody, welcome to D&D Encounters Season 15 Murder Boulder's Gate, Session 4. I won't make that mistake a second time. And Stage 3, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, this time you're correct.
I guess this D&D session was pretty hands-on.
Oh, you're funny.
Poor Boo. Poor Boo. All right, Craig, tell us what happened at your table.
Very good, sir.
Let's just go right into it.
All right, last week I ended up with a manufactured cliffhanger because we didn't. This is not something part of the adventure, but the characters had discovered an argument in an alley. Someone pulled a dagger on someone else, so they chased these guys down. Managed to render unconscious the one who pulled the dagger. The other one got away. They found under his roguish-like robes, he was wearing a watch uniform and was carrying a letter on him as well. And they opened up the letter. It actually had a wax seal that one of the characters recognized with the sign of the watch on it. And on the inside, it was a somewhat cryptic letter just saying that there had been an amendment to the plan and to locate Lareleth Thundreth or Isra Brackrail as they would be a more suitable trigger. Anyway, this is something that's sort of a player sort of a directed side story that's been evolving, and I added this little twist into it, and I can't really go into too much more detail about what's going on with that just for fear of my players listening, but it's a very interesting little subplot going on that I think is going to tie right into the game. But anyhow, so the characters came back. They had just finished their night, escorting all the outer city people out of the lower city after all that vandalism. And they went back to report into what's his name, Ravengard. Said, "Hey, this is what happened. The outer city guys are all gone. We got taken care of. We found this letter. There's something crazy going on. We suspect the Watchers involved. We think they're trying to undermine you. We think that they're a little more involved and they know a little more than they're letting on. Blah 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 blah." And so they got him thinking and saying, very interesting. So the guy that they knocked out, who was also, like I said before, was a an employee of the Fist. He was brought aside for interrogation, and Ravengard vowed to get the truth no matter what, and had promoted, as the characters had shown such great loyalty to him, he had promoted them to lieutenant. No longer do they have to don these tabards. They were given the just the badge to flash, and were able to go otherwise in their street clothes and conceal that at all other times. Now, of course, they have dominion over some of the lower ranking officers of the Fist. So he advised that they've done a good job. They've had a long night. They now have this apartment complex, sort of this area of rooms to themselves, being higher ranking lieutenants. Please, have a good night's sleep, meet in the morning, and we'll go over your orders from here. You're going to report directly to me. I'm going to have special missions for you. The whole sort of a shebang that you guys are special. You're my special task force now.
This reminds me of, it almost sounds like Training Day. Remember that guy, Denzel Washington, had that like ghetto house all the way in the the CD area.
Yeah. So I mean, basically, they are, they're his sort of like his special ops kind of a group. Now they've kind of proven their loyalty to him in his eyes. So he's decided that yes, these guys are my go-to guys. Anything that I tell you is. If I tell you it's in confidence, no one's to know, blah, 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 blah. Secret missions will work off the book stuff sometimes. So the next morning comes, they come in and he's all flustered and upset because, of course, the hands of five of the statues have gone missing, and he wants them to look into it. Now, in the way it's written, he sends some people to question Real Sorrel's thing out in Kalimshan. I use this as an opportunity that he sent them specifically as a sort of, because he didn't have he suspects it's the guild, but he always kind of suspects the guild behind of everything. So he's like, I know that the guild is guilty of this. I know that if you went to someone like Rilsa, I know she's connected. She'll be able to get some information for you. I want you to go there and put the pressure on her. So I had the players go and do that as opposed to just writing it off as it just happened. But by someone else's hand. So I also use this as a way for Rilsa to entice the player. So when they got to Little Kalimshan, they discovered that she was actually quite pleasant, more than willing to cooperate with them. She was very forthcoming about her involvement with the guild, and well, to a certain extent anyway, to say that she's had dealings with them. She knows that everyone views them as a criminal organization, and surely the PCs are no exception, but really this is the truth of the matter, so do what you got to do kind of thing. And they were all very taken aback by that, and thought that this person's being like really brutally honest with us. She's being very trusted. She's allowed us to search her place. No problems were... They were found. So they got to talking. This, a lot of role playing took place in this particular part where they were talking back and forth. Had a couple customers come in and selling dirty wares and stuff like that that she was paying really top dollar for. So they were all rather impressed. She explained her business, how she's paying higher than she would for anyone else, just to, as a way to give money back to the poor people, to those who need it, that kind of thing. And they were rather impressed there. And, she kind of guided the conversation a little into saying that, the guild is willing to deals in the truth. You've heard all this back and forth with the Fist and the Watch. Those guys are sitting on their thrones of gold while they fight back and forth with each other. They want to pin anything that goes wrong on the guild. Well, the guild, while they're not perfect, this is what they represent, blah, 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 blah. We're Robin Hood people, basically. And the PCs were quite impressed with it and decided that they weren't going to press her really hard, and decided that they would give her a heads up that she's kind of being thumbed and keep a low profile. And she invited them to say, my door's open to you. If you want to know more about the guild, if you want to know more about the truth, you come back to me and my door's open. You guys are... You seem like you're a little more open to the truth. So that kind of got their interest peaked. They went back to Ravengard, and he had decided that, after they came back, they reported, said, oh, we don't think she's behind it. We actually kind of think that this is the Watch that's doing this, because we found this letter before and blah, 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 blah. So he's like, okay, well, he's like, I don't want you to think that the guild is some sort of noble cause or some sort of innocent group. They definitely have blood on their hands, but he's like, I trust you. You're my lieutenants. I trust your judgment in this case. I'm willing to look into the Watch here, but I don't want to just go into the Upper City and start flinging accusations left, right, and center. I want to talk about this. Let's go over a strategy tonight. It's like at this point, they've kind of gone back and forth in the city throughout the day. So he's like, let's go over the plans tonight. The Upper City is going to be closed off. I don't want anyone else knowing what's going on. We need to have a solid plan of action before we go in there and make any kind of crazy accusations. So, over that night, they kind of discuss plans. And I had him come up with a very flimsy sort of like, okay, well, why don't we try this? And you guys had this encounter with this character before from the Watch. And, I know you guys reported to me that he had killed someone unjustly. Maybe we can use that to our advantage. Maybe we can somehow lure him out. It was a flimsy idea, basically to get them into the Upper City and to try and draw someone out. However, of course, the next morning, they find out that, in fact, there's been another vandalism, and now none other than Minsk, the beloved ranger of Baldur's Gate, and of course, anyone who's played the PC game will absolutely recognize that name. Minsk, and the hand that carried Boo was carved right off. And from there, they... basically go up to investigate what the hell happened up there. They just sort of abandon any plans of trying to lure anyone from the Watch out and decide to just question people up there. But over the course of the past few sessions, my players have actually made some connections in the city. And one of them happened to be a captain dock worker that they had sort of buddied up with and had paid up some money to be sort of one of their contacts, and a couple of other contacts of the city. So at this point, the players decide they're going to exploit those guys, and it actually worked out quite perfectly, because anyone who played knows that that some of the youngins who were behind this vandalism did end up going to the ferries and getting a ferry across over to Worms Crossings area. And I pretty much exploited that, so these characters got to like sort of cash in on some of the investment, reputation investment that they've been sort of putting in with these guys. And I thought it worked out perfectly for that. And again, we had a great role playing. They were using their badges rather judiciously. They weren't always just busting it out. They weren't trying to lord over everyone, but when it came to it, they needed to use it. They did. You know, for example, they were talking to some of the lamplighters who knew a little bit. They were mouthing off to the PCs a little bit until they flashed their badges and they're like, "Oh, sorry, officer. Oh, sorry." They were just kind of young punk kids, right? But then, you know, as the kids got on the ferry and going off, a couple of the lamplighter kids were like, flipped them off from the dock, like "F you pigs," kind of a kind of thing. So the players got themselves riled, like, "Oh, I guess we can't do anything about it now because we're already on the boat." But they made their way across, though, and they decided they were gonna, because they were really friendly with this particular captain, is Captain McGill. He was giving them everything he knew about. He's like, "Yeah, listen, I took these kids over here. They're really nervous. They kept going on about this Hadju character. I don't know what they were doing. They had something with them, but they were definitely very nervous. You know, I knew they were from the Upper City. They're wearing their fancy clothes ever since these sumptuary laws have come back in over the past couple of days. It seems like these upper class people have been kind of flaunting it about. And, you know, these kids were clearly not very wise in coming here dressed like that, but they didn't seem to be using very good judgment. They were very nervous about something." So anyway, he kind of pointed them in that path, and they investigated around Worms Crossing once they got up there and had encountered a rather irate halfling. I believe he's a halfling. He's been up all night. He's been working his ass off, basically, and he's got bags under his eyes. He's just complaining to his cohorts about how he's had to work for so long, and you know, they're all rolling their eyes because they've heard this from him several times. But as the PCs come and talk to him, he uses this as an excuse to cut it early. He's like, "Listen, these guys need an escort. They're looking for this Hadju guy. I know where his shop is. I'll take them there." So the PCs end up over at the pottery shop, and a couple of them went to the back to because there's a front and back entrance, and a couple of them went to the back just in case the three will go on the front, and if we have any trouble, if someone tries to get at the back, we'll have someone waiting there. So three guys get into the front. They start questioning this nervous pottery shop owner, who's they're asking about, "What do you know what happened to the statue hands?" And he's very jumpy. He's like, "Oh, I have some very nice hand vases, if that's what you're asking for."
Craig, I played him exactly the same way.
he's holding a vase, and then right at that moment, that's when they decide, "Oh, that's, I'm going to intimidate him." Of course, he's going to drop the vase and smashes it, and it startles everyone in the room. And he immediately gives up the kids. You know, they're in the basement. They're hiding out. I'm sorry. They offered a lot of money. But as this is happening, a few watch soldiers have snuck into Worms Crossing and have decided they're coming in through the back and run in unexpectedly into the two characters in the back, and they're kind of at odds with each other because the characters have this grudge against the watch based on that letter that they found previously, as well as the mounting evidence that the watch is up to something sneaky. So there's a little bit of a face-off there between them. I had three watch soldiers come up, and the two PCs were facing off, and they were kind of bickering back and forth about kind of taking pot shots at each other. Like, "Well, you guys don't belong here. You don't have any authority out here. Why don't you go back to Upper City?" Like, "You know what? This doesn't concern you. We're just here to take care of this situation, and we'll be out of your way." So it kind of got into like a back and forth argument where they're like, "Well, you know, the Fist can't really do anything about it. They're not really a real army. They're more of a mercenary thing," and blah, 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 blah. And so I kept going back and forth between what was going on inside and outside. And eventually, the two outside with the watch had decided, "Okay, fine, we'll let you guys go in." They kind of, I think the thought process that we have friends inside. If we get them in there, then we can have them surrounded at the very least, because they were outmatched outside. So they let the watch guys go in, and the watch kind of got all cocky about it. Like, "I told you, we didn't even have to sneak in. We could have just waltzed right in, and the Fist would have just moved aside for us." They kind of had this sort of snooty upper class attitude about it. As soon as they got in, of course, that we had the kids were being brought up, and we're talking to the PCs that were inside. They had the hand up there, and it turned into another big argument that broke out into a very minor skirmish. So we did have a combat, but it was a very minor little combat in the store. And one of our characters, which is a half-orc and is a barbarian, went into a rage and had decided to dispatch a couple of those watch characters in the fight, and outright murdered one of them, to the horror of the other PCs watching. And it was quite the interesting aftermath afterwards. Of course, the kids are just terrified at what they see. Hadru, the pottery shop owner, is just, you know, he's completely lost his mind after what he sees here, and he's just kind of starting to develop a little bit of post-traumatic stress, I'd imagine. And from there, that's pretty much where we ended it off, because now the characters have to decide how do they want to proceed. They've just outright murdered someone, or one of them has just outright killed someone, like murder out of an emotional reaction, basically, whereas the other two were knocked out. But yeah, that's kind of how we left things off. Now, the interesting thing is that the player that committed the murder in Cold Blood here is not going to be present next week. So we've decided, sort of out of character, that she's going to just panic and run, take off into the city, not knowing what to do. Yeah. So.
Cool. So my question for you, Craig, I mean, it seems like you have quite the development going on there, and it seems like your players are getting really into it, and it sounds really cool. Yeah. Have you been taking into account character reputation? Because, I mean, as much as they are Raven Guard's, you know, minions and undercover agents, I mean, they must have a fairly large reputation in Baldur's Gate now. So, I mean, for them to go incognito anywhere else, have you been taking into account that?
Yep. Yeah, they're recognized everywhere they go.
Okay, so they just know that the Raven Guard's
like,
lackeys.
When they went into to Rael's, she immediately one of them went in and was able to sort of dress himself up to look a little different, but when the whole group came in afterwards, she immediately recognized who they were.
Okay.
But I mean, she had a different motives sort of going on in the background there.
I'm just saying it would be a little bit interesting to try and get into the upper city, right? I mean, you know, they're well known. I mean, I'm sure the Watch will be looking out for them because they know they're Raven Guard's lackeys, right?
Yep.
So, cool.
No, there's. I have a lot of things going on in the scenes, some of which in the book, some of which have sort of developed out of their actions. So I actually have like a little notebook of a whole bunch of things I'm keeping track of.
Have they discovered the tunnels?
They have not yet.
Ah.
So, indeed.
Oh, I didn't say that, did I? Yeah, I did. All right. Cool. So now we've got point B, Derek.
Yeah, so my session this week was very different than Craig's. And every week before this week, we've had a big problem with huge tables. Lots of players, not enough DMs. This week, to compensate for that problem, we had 4 DMs, and there was much rejoicing. Hurrah!
Yay!
And in order to ensure consistency, like as Craig's been saying, like his table, the players at his table have been putting in a lot of work to lay down the foundation for things that they hope will pay off later. And so in order to keep that consistency, I sent an email out to our group and we talked about it a little bit last week and again this week, that we would cap the tables at 6. We would try and keep the tables as consistent as possible moving forward. And that we would now, with the fourth DM, you know, expand into that fourth table. And hopefully that way we could accommodate up to 24 players and 4 DMs, so up to 28 people on a given week. We have not had that many ever yet. Although I think we had 25 one week already this season. So, you know, we'll go from there. Now, I knew this week a couple people were going to be absent. They told me that last week. But we assumed everybody else with our regulars would be there. And we had 2 walk-ups, which is great. We keep seeing new people every week. So Craig's table had 5 this week. Right, Craig? You had 5 there?
Yeah, that's right.
And there was a 6th. Who is normally with that group, who had already told the group that she wouldn't be there this week. So we said, okay, well, you know what, we'll save her seat. The other table, one of our other tables, they had a full 6. They actually, all 6 of them missed last week because the DM was not able to be there. So they decided that as a group, they were going to take the week off. So they're actually a week behind. I think their plan was to do double session this week. They were certainly still playing when I left. So so that group has 6 and they're happy to stay in that 6. And then myself and the other DM were basically going to split up everybody else into 2 groups. Unfortunately, when we were ready to actually get started, Craig's table was good to go. The other table was good to go. I had 3 people at my table, 3 of whom I've had all along. The other DM had 2 brand new players and 1 guy who was, I think, a walk-up at Craig's table last week. And we were expecting as many as five more of our regular players this week. So we said, well, we're at that funny line where if we merge into one group, there's eight of us, two of us being DMs. And so, like, if the one DM wants to sit in the wings and not participate, then I could run a table of six. But if we get those regulars showing up, suddenly I could be running a table of 10, which could be silly. So since every week up until now, we've had players arrive late. We just decided to err on the side of caution. We just started with two groups of three, knowing that we were going to have more people show up. And of course, nobody else showed up. So we had two very small tables of three, which for me was a crazy change because I've had eight and nine players every week until this week. So to go down to three was kind of, you know, a big change. But I thought, great, that just means we're going to get a lot more done. No, not so much. So anyway, getting on to the actual adventure. So my group last week, I had enticed them. They had Rial's agent had reached out to them and said, hey, you know, you should come and talk to my boss, Rial. She's got some info for you. And basically, we had convinced half the party that, you know, working for the Flaming Fists, probably not something that they should keep doing. With the three people that were actually present this week, two of them were at that secret meeting and one was not. The two guys that were at the secret meeting could not convince the third guy that they should stop working for the Flaming Fists at this time. But that they decided they'd keep working for the Flaming Fists, but they wouldn't take everything at face value anymore. If they were asked to perform a task, they would make sure that they looked into it a little bit more closely before just blindly completing the task. So I thought that was good, knowing where this week was going to go. So then when we started the session, I gave them the description. Okay, the statues have been the hands of the statues have been defaced, de-handed, whatever we kept saying that. Can you deface hands or would they be de-handed? that was sort of the running gag. So I had it like the way I've been running them is like almost like they're part of like a police force. So every day in the morning they have like the briefing. Okay, in today's briefing, you're looking for the following fugitives that are on the go. You know, he gives them the daily assignments. So I said, while they're giving you the daily assignments, he gets an update. You know, this just handed to me. Five statues have been defaced overnight and have their hands were chopped off, and they're like, oh my God, what's going on? So of course my guys were immediately like, okay, we want to go and investigate this. I'm like, yeah, okay, why not? So they wanted to actually go and check out the statues. So we had to spend 5 or 10 minutes looking on the map to find out where all the statues were. Cause they're all listed, of course. So that was, you know, easier than I thought it would be. And they decided that they just picked the one that they, you know, randomly they sort of closed their eyes and went, this one. And of course, they picked the one that was on the East Cliff. It's not actually in the city. It's the statue of Baldarion.
Looking into the sea or yeah, looking into the river. One. Yeah.
So I said to them, I'm like, I couldn't find a description of it in the book. So I thought, well, if the statue is on the cliff side, it's got to be big. Because why make a statue that's like life size if people wouldn't be able to see it from below the cliff? So I said, yeah, this statue is like 12 feet tall. So they're like, oh my God, how big would the hands be? I'm like, yeah, that's a good point. I'm like, the hands would be pretty big. Like, I'm like, the hands are probably 2 or 3 feet long. I'm like, holy crap, how many people would they have needed to walk off with those? And I'm like, oh man, this is becoming more complicated. So anyway, they spent a little bit of time. They managed to do some checks. And I described it. I'm like, clearly the hands were like sawed off. They weren't like smashed off. I said, if someone just smashed the hands, you'd see all the rubble on the ground beneath the statue. I go, there's no evidence of that. And I go, one of the guys climbed up the statue and he looked and I go, you can see like the marks. It was clear like a saw. I go, again, it was like a sawing back and forth motion, like a hacksaw. It wasn't just like a one clean cut with a magic sword or something. Like,
I had the exact same description, by the way. That's really funny. Anyway.
Oh yeah. So, anyway, they spent some time doing that and they wanted to look around for like clues and footprints. So I came up with some details that was basically like, this was a crew. Like there absolutely was at least three or four guys minimum, possibly as many as eight. And they're like, man, it would have taken a long time to hacksaw through a statue if the arms were that thick and the hands were that big. I'm like, oh, yeah. And they're like, wouldn't they have been seen? Wouldn't they have made noise? Like, exactly. I go, and so they jumped to the conclusion, correctly, I assume, that it was absolutely a bunch of people. Like, it was a coordinated, trained crew that came out with the explicit intent of cutting off these hands. It wasn't just one guy. Like, there's no way it could have been one guy based on what they were seeing with the evidence. So I'm like, okay, that's good. And then, so then they wanted to question people, but they all flubbed their charisma checks like awful. So I'm like, oh yeah, you have no jurisdiction in Outer City. And people know that. Everyone you ask either was harassed by the Watch or the Flaming Fists yesterday because of the sumptuary laws, or they know somebody who was, and they just give you the cold shoulder and attitude. And they're like, are they doing that because they're like, they know where these things are? Or are they doing that just because they don't want to help us? I'm like, you can't tell. Because they were rolling awful. Oh man, their dice rolls were terrible. So they spent, and then they wanted to go and see more of the statue. So I did a second statue just so they could confirm that the method by which the hands were cut off was identical. I wanted to make that, I wanted to establish that fact because that was going to be important the next day, right? So after they had investigated two of the statues, they were like, do we have to investigate all the statues? I'm like, no, let's just say you go and look at the rest. It's pretty much more of the same. And then I talked about how there's the outrage in the city and people are pissed off and all the rest of that stuff. I also was able to work in the vandalism that I had missed from the week before.
Mm-hmm.
That people were ticked off, but I had the vandalism more as a response to the sumptuary laws. And so that seemed to work in okay. So then the next day, you know, they're like, okay. And so the part, Craig, that you were talking about where it says like the Flaming Fist send patrols to look for stuff. I had that just happen in the background while they were investigating the statues themselves.
Right.
So, you know, the next day they get their report and it's like, our guys have looked in all of the hotspots and nobody could find any evidence. It's a complete mystery. And then it's like, this just handed to me. Oh my God, another statue. You know, and it was like, this time. And then when he had the first one, I had the guy like sort of go, oh my God, the statue. Like, it was like, he was surprised, but not like nothing big. And it's like, when this one was handed to him, he's like, oh my God, you're never going to believe this. And they're like, oh my God, what happened? Did someone get killed? Another statue's hands. And they're like, so what? I go, this time it's the beloved Ranger. And I'm like, everybody in the room is like, not the Ranger. And of course the players have no idea. None of them are familiar with this mythology. So they're like, what's the big deal? So I was like, in character, I had the other guy, you don't know about the Ranger? So they're explaining it to them. They're like, oh, okay, whatever. So they're like, you know what, you guys, and then so they're like, well, you know what, we want to go and check this out then. They're like, we can be impartial because we don't have an emotional ties to this. And they're like, that's a good idea, you should go. And then Raven Guard was like, don't forget, you have zero jurisdiction in the upper yeah. city. So you guys got to tread lightly. But they're like, we suspect that the Watch will be cooperative given that we've already started this investigation yesterday. So that should help. And then just as they were leaving, it was like, oh, we've just received a note from the guy who's the master of cobbles. He's responsible for roads, bridges, and other public stoneworks. I'm like, he's this noble guy. And, you know, he's like the master engineer and he needs to speak to someone immediately. So, of course, the PCs are like, well, we're going to go do this first and that first. And I'm like, OK, just a rule of protocol, guys. You would know based on the time you've been here that the noble guy wants to meet you. You go see him right away. And they're like, oh, OK, we better do that. So they go to see him and he makes it very clear that, you know, whoever did this is the worst kind of pawn scum and needs to be dealt with in the appropriate way so that there's no chance they could ever do this again. Wink, wink, kill them. And so the PCs picked up on that pretty quick and he gave them the dirty money. Here's 50 gold pieces. There's only three of them in the party, right? I'm like, here's 50 gold pieces each. You make sure that whoever did this, there's never any possible chance they could ever do it again. Take care of business. And then he's like, you know what I mean? Wink, wink. And they're like, oh yeah, we get it loud and clear. No problem. And then, so they said, they're like, I guess we're going to have to kill the culprits. I was like, well, that's up to you guys. You took his dirty money. And they're like, okay, well, we're sort of obligated. And, so then they wanted to go see the statue of the Ranger, which I was glad I didn't have to sort of push them in that direction. They just decided they wanted to go there. And so within like 2 seconds, I'm like, yeah, you're looking at the hands. And I'm like, clearly this was a different instrument because the description that's provided is these hands were basically broken off with a dagger that was being used as like a chisel. Right. So it's like the old ones were sawing motions. I go, this one's clearly like three or four good bangs with a dagger. Or, I didn't describe it as a dagger. And they're like, oh, yeah. Okay. So they're like, oh, it's almost like they had to do it in a hurry. They couldn't do their normal precision. And I'm like, yeah, that's exactly what it was. Like, you know, they sort of went in the wrong direction, but I didn't correct them. And so then they did their – they had a little interaction with the Watch, and they did their search. They found the brooch. They found the dagger. And I had them make checks to see if they recognized the symbols, and, of course, they didn't. So they had to interact with some of the locals to find out what was what. They went to the noble houses, and the parents were like, oh no, that, like, the one, the dad was like, oh yeah, that's my son's dagger. And they're like, oh, is he here? And they're like, yeah, we reported that stolen like a month ago. That could have been from anybody. And they're like, oh, that doesn't sound legit. He's totally lying. And I'm like, well, he's certainly not changing his tune. They're like, can we speak to your son? Oh no, he was at a big party last night. He's not home yet. I'm like, oh, okay. So then they go to the other house, and it's this time they talk to the mom, and they're like, oh, we found this clasp. And she's like, oh good, give it here. That's mine. And they're like, whoa, whoa, this is evidence. She's like, evidence of what? And they're like, well, we think that this might have something to do with this vandalism. She goes, are you accusing someone from my family? Oh, get out of here. Like, she's basically is all offended. But they did manage to find out that her son is also was at this party. And so they're like, okay, let's find out where this party was. So they start asking around, and I'm like, yeah, you run into a couple of drunk girls. I'm like, they're clearly hungover. They're walking home from this party. And so they finally made some good diplomacy checks. So they managed to trick the girls into revealing some details about the party. And they're like, what about these two guys? Oh, they're party poopers. They left early. And they're like, okay, so these guys must have something to do with it. So then I had to help them a little bit. So they ended up, when they left upper city, they got to the gate to the lower city. And so I had the guards sort of prompt them a little bit. And then they're like, oh, did you see anyone come out at night? And they're like, yeah, there's a couple of rich kids came running out. They had these big backpacks with them, because again, I said the statue of the ranger's got to be big, right? Because it's on a big giant pedestal. So I go, yeah, it's probably like a 10-foot statue, so the hands are going to be bigger. I'm like, oh yeah, that's totally them. So they managed to track them down. Now by this point we were already 2 hours in, and my guys had been complaining for the last few weeks that they hadn't really got a chance to fight anything. Like, they were playing paladin fighter and a cleric, and they're like, come on man, we want to fight some monsters. So I was hoping to put a little side quest thing in to get them to fight some stuff this week. But by this point, I was like, oh my God, it's going to take us like another half an hour just to wrap up loose ends. So we sort of fast tracked a little bit. I had an agent of Rial's who they had met the previous week, basically just spoon feed them the last little bits. He's like, oh yeah, you guys have been doing a great job. We understand you've found some evidence, and you're looking for these kids. We know that they were in the outer city. They took this ferry, and that they're possibly in this merchant. This merchant was going to, whatever, something about the potter guy, right? That's where they ended up, the pottery shop.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
Hadur or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. I couldn't pronounce the dude's name. I tried six times. I was like, oh my God, just those letters together, I couldn't make the sounds. So basically I just had him point them out, because at this point the party was getting kind of restless. So they and he's like, oh, but he was like, okay, so we're concerned that if these guys are guilty and if they get brought to justice, that they're gonna get a slap on the wrist, and that the residents of Baldur's Gate are gonna be forced to pay to fix these statues. And it's going to be the people who have the least that are going to be asked to end up paying the most for it. Like, they're going to have to get stuck paying a new city tax that they really can't afford. You need to make sure that if these guys were the ones, that their families pay the full price of the restoration and that they don't weasel out of it. And the party's like, oh, that makes total sense. For sure. Absolutely. For sure. And so, yeah, then when they went to the pottery shop, it was like, you know, much like yours, Craig, the guy was like immediately sweating when he saw them walking in, because they brought they're like, we're going to go get some backup. They brought like 10 guards with them. Nice. They all just go storming into the store, and he's like, this is too many in the pottery shop. Please leave. they're like, we're looking for these kids. And he's like, yeah, he starts sweating. I don't know anything about kids. And then they're like, and then one of the guys is like, I'm going to go to the second level. Cause I'm like, yeah, it's a shop on the main level and his house on the top level. He goes, I start to walk up the stairs. He's like, no, no, don't go upstairs. There's no one hiding in the closet. And then the party's like, okay, we run up as fast as we can. And I'm like, you get up there and the kids are like climbing out the window. And so they immediately caught them, and they found the hands there for the Baldur's, for the
Minsk
Ranger statue. Yeah. And they're like, are the other hands there? I'm like, nope.
Yeah.
They didn't even do anything. They're like, okay, well, this should be enough to convict them.
I know. That's pretty much how it went with mine, dude.
So they took that. And then as they're walking them back across the bridge to the Baldur's Gate, I go, now remember, you took that guy's 50 GP. He wants to make sure that this could never happen again, which basically, as you guys decided, that meant was code for they should be killed for this. I was like, they're like, yeah, but if we kill them, we can't prove they did it. I go, well, between the dagger, the brooch, and the hands that you've now recovered, it's pretty clear. And I said, with that, you should be able to get their families to pay for everything. And the one guy's like, oh, man, I'm just going to push them off the bridge then. And he's like, I'm going to say they tried to escape, and I'm going to push them off the bridge. And I was like, what are the rest of you guys going to do? No, no, we can't do that. We have to do the right thing. I was like, okay. I'm like, your window of opportunity is passing. You're walking over the bridge. And they're like, the party is arguing about whether or not they want to do this. And so finally, in the end, they decided, no, no, we're going to have these kids brought to justice. So so they ended up returning the kids to the thing. And so it says in the adventure, there's a little, this is what happens. So I assume that like a week or some time passes between this week's and next week's, like more than just a day.
Yeah.
So I said, I go, assume like at least a week passes. And I go, this is what happens. There's a very public trial. The kids are seen found guilty, even though they don't, they're offered a more lenient sentence if they produce the hands from the other statues, which they refuse to do. Their lawyer has instructed them not to say anything. They get 10 years each, and the families are basically outcasted by the other rich families. I said, normally the nobles would all stick together and be like, no, no, we shouldn't have to pay for this. But I go, because the public is so pissed off, all the other noble families are like, absolutely, they should pay for it. Their kids, their problem, their money, they got to fix it. And so the PCs were like, all right, job well done. We did exactly what we were supposed to do. So nice. It's like, okay, well, yeah, I guess. So we'll see how things play next week. But I found that with this week's, though, it just felt very forced in, like, with the group I had. I mean, I only had a few people, but I think even if I had had a full table, it was sort of like the events are going to happen whether the heroes get involved or not. And even if they do get involved, it's like it would be fairly unreasonable for them to have killed these kids. Like, I didn't think the group was going to. I just sort of teased them a little bit with that option.
Yeah.
But like, that's a fair option, right? It's like, do you kill them or do you turn them over to the law? And it's like, well, of course they're going to turn them over. Like, it's not like these kids are dangerous. Like, there's 5 or 6 people in most parties. Like, they're going to clearly be able to take them.
Yeah, I had the cobblestone worker guy sort of like, because when the heroes were in the wide of my thing, he was just kind of like loudly saying, as they were obviously inspecting the statue, you're like, geez, whoever did this, I'd be willing to pay if, you know, if you made sure that they could never do it again. Maybe these kids should lose their hands and replace the hands of the statue. Or I didn't say kids, but whoever the culprits.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? But it was one of those things where I also agree that it would be unreasonable once you find the, especially the way my players are playing it, like, they're not going to come in there and slaughter a couple of kids.
No. And, like, although that the way the adventure set up, depending on which power group you're associated with, each group wants a slightly different outcome. But
right.
This, other than this outcome, like, the other one seemed very out of left field. Like, it's, well, like, this is clearly what's going to happen.
There's the additional fourth one, right? Because there's the three different people, and then there's the cobblestone guy who, in case they don't go for anyone else, the cobblestone guy can give them. And I think he's the only one who offers death to the kids.
Yeah, and then, it even says when you're scoring the things, it says, if the heroes don't get involved, then stuff still happens anyway. And I thought, yeah, well, then why are we even playing this week? Like, it just, it seems like a filler week. It didn't really seem to add much to the story. Like, I was saying to Mark before we started recording, this is the week I've had the least fun with in like 6 months. Like, it just, to me, it seemed like a boring filler encounter that even the players, there were certainly parts they did enjoy, but I think overall they sort of walked away going, ho-hum, boring, another week with no fights. So
yeah,
I don't know.
Well, it seems like a very odd, I mean, I haven't heard any combat whatsoever. I haven't gotten any comments regarding combat. I haven't. All in all, it just seems that the season is very.
It's politically
intrigued. Yeah.
I had a talk with my players afterwards. I wanted to gauge, like, what do you guys think? Last week we had no combat. This week we had. I mean, it was a combat, but it wasn't really. It was just because there was aggression. They easily handled the situation. It wasn't anything that they had any. Hope or sorry, any threat to actually lose, because it was a minor sort of little force that came in. So I just wanted to gauge how they felt, because there's, like I said, there's a lot of role playing, and like you said, Mark, there's a lot of political intrigue, and a couple of players aren't necessarily full bore into the role playing thing, right? So you have a few more people that are a little more quiet. So sorry, go ahead.
What about just like? Creating a little comment. I mean, all of you are part of Flaming Fist, right?
Yeah.
For now.
Yeah, you all control.
Yeah, exactly.
You control the dock area and all that stuff. Why can't we have like some Kalimshans that come in and, you know, they're just trying to steal some wares off the dock. You know, there's a scuffle or something. And it's just so odd from.
I know what you mean, but for me, for this one, there's a lot of detail to get through.
Yeah.
And there was, and like I said, once the players, because I thought this one would go a little faster.
Yeah, me too.
The characters really start getting into the detail, and they want to follow up on these leads. And you know what I mean? Like, you just have a. That's why I had this idea that okay, we have another combat. I'm gonna put like sort of an aggressor in at this point if they get to if it comes out this way.
Right.
Then I'm gonna have an aggressor sort of come in, and I think it would be feasible based on how what the intentions are and what each of the sort of the main leads know. We're gonna have a sort of another like little run-in situation, and we'll see how they react. It'll be up to them if they want to turn to combat. Because last week we had a situation where there were some unruly patrons coming out of the taverns that were up against some of the unruly, irritable Flaming Fist guards, but you know, the characters chose not to engage in a combat with them. So I wanted to leave it up to them again this week. This time it did, you know, push came to shove. There was a minor combat, but I wanted to talk, see how everyone felt about it, because obviously combat is a big part of D&D as well. So I just want to make sure that, you know, people aren't sitting here like, oh Jesus, what the hell are we bothering to come here for? We're just sitting around talking all night.
Right.
But as far as I know, I mean, the players seem rather interested. And I think for me tonight, they had a lot of investment into characters and whatnot that they had sort of invented themselves, more or less. And seeing them incorporated into the story and make it feel like more of a living, breathing kind of thing. So, like, I agree with Derek with what he said, though. Like what was the point? Like, this particular week, it was a lot of it was just stuff that I had already had brewing that we just kind of capitalized on, because this stuff is going to happen regardless. So let's do some other stuff to shake it up.
Yeah. And I mean, we talked a little bit about that last week too, where there wasn't really a lot of structure. Whereas last week's was this new law is announced and vandalism happens, go. Whereas this week it was this chain of events is going to play out in the following order. If the party gets involved, insert them in the appropriate place, and if they have a chance to make decisions, great, but it's going to move forward whether they're participating or not. So I don't know. It's and to your point, like last week I threw in a combat again. It was, I just literally went around the table twice, everyone make two different attacks to represent this fight, just so the players got to roll dice. But yeah, so far we're 4 weeks in, and I think that the people who created this adventure are forgetting the third pillar of D&D, where it's like, yeah, we're getting the other stuff, but we haven't had any combat, any meaningful combat.
Yeah.
And I got to be honest, I haven't read ahead too far, but I don't see a lot of that coming. And I think that although we're getting a lot of new people coming out to try the adventure, I'm concerned that they're not getting some of the best parts of the game. Like for me, combat has always been one of the parts I enjoy the most. And yeah, you need some structure around the combat, but not having it at all seems to be hurting it as well. So, I don't know. We'll see how it plays out over the next few weeks.
Yeah, well, that's what I was saying. I mean, like what you guys have been talking about, that this seems to have been a filler session, right? But instead of following what was in the module, maybe you could have had like you said, is the outcome regardless of what the PCs do, the outcome is going to be the same. Pretty much, right?
I know what you mean, but my concern is that we're going to get too far off the trail, and it's going to be harder to bring it back in. And then at this point, a whole bunch of the adventures gone by, and the characters really haven't had a lot of input in on it.
Yeah, and my concern, that's a big concern I've got, but also just time. Like, even just following what was printed took 2.5 hours for my group, and I was the first group done. Last week, we were 2.5 hours. Like, every week, we seem to be 2.5 hours, which I'll admit has been partly because the groups have been so big. But even with a much smaller group, this week, I was still well over 2 hours. And so as much as I actually had a little side thing worked in where the players had to do this. I don't want to give it away because I might still use it.
Yeah.
But it had a little combat set out. I think part of the challenge for me is that when you're in the city, like, you're not going to encounter monsters.
I know.
You're not going to fight them the same way you would fight a monster.
Yeah.
And it's something unsatisfying about, oh, more drunk guys. Like, wow, this is so boring. Like, you know, I'm tempted to just say like a random monster attacks the city. It's like, oh, okay, well, we're going to shoot the dragon then, you know, like just have something show up, like, from out of the water, this jumps into the city, and you guys happen to be on the site. I mean, it might seem a little contrived, but I think the players would have a lot of fun with it. And
Pull out a couple of Kuotoas and, you know, some Chihuahuan or something like that, and just trident the crap out of people in the docks.
Yeah, something that is clearly a monster. Something that they have absolutely no qualms or no doubt about killing. Like, this is clearly a bad thing, and killing it is the right course of action, and there will be no negative repercussions for doing so.
Well, didn't they have the, don't they have that, that Temple of Umberlee or the Water Queens or whatever it is, where, you know, all of a sudden the Water Queens aren't coming back to their church. You know, investigate. Blah, 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 one session.
Well, I can tell you that there is absolutely at least one more session like tonight, not including the end session where it's all the same thing. But there's another session coming up. I think it's session
It's next week, stage 4. It even says right in it.
I meant stage 8. Sorry, what I meant was like tonight. It was just the one thing that happens. Right? Whereas everyone else has their own separate thing that you can at least, because that's the thing, when you have the two or three separate events happening, you can cross mingle and you can find comments out of that, I think. But when it's like tonight's thing, like I said, when it's just the one major event that's happening and everyone has their own sort of point of view on it, everyone was kind of doing the same thing just in different ways, right? There's another one session like that prior to the final sequence.
Now, my other thought was there's the supplementary adventure you can download from the Wizard's site, where it's like, here are a couple of little side things. I call them side quests, but they're not really. They're just sort of like little side doodads you can throw in. So I thought, oh, this is perfect. I'll throw one of those in this week, because this week doesn't really seem like there's a lot happening. And then I read it, and it's like, oh, you can't do this one until after stage 4, and you can't do this one until after stage 8. And I'm like, oh, man, we're not even at those stages yet.
Yeah, I know.
That's why I created my own little thing, because I thought, okay, well, I'll do just something that has nothing to do with the bigger story. It's just the players happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, as player characters often are. But one last thing before I forget. Leveling up. I told my group for next week to level up to level 2.
I did the exact same thing.
And I would have totally forgot, but I heard some of the players talking about it. They're like, oh, I wonder how many weeks before we level up. And I'm like, that's funny exactly, you ask.
That's exactly what happened at my table, too.
I was just about to tell you.
One of my players was like, I wonder when we level up. And I was like, actually, next week you do. Or like you do as of next week.
Well, that's so what I told my group. So when I was giving them the wrap up at the end, I go, there's going to be at least a week between the end of this and the beginning of the next. I go, possibly longer. I'll read it up to make sure. But I said, during that time, the characters are able to level up. And they're like, oh, well, that makes perfect sense that it would be this week. I'm like, yes, that's exactly what I had planned.
Exactly.
Don't you love that when that happens?
Yeah.
it's like teaching, right? Teaching a concept, and a student goes up and says, well, sir, what about this? Absolutely. And you're like, damn, I'm glad he was here.
My players actually pointed something out tonight. Like, oh, I bet this is happening because of this. And I was like, yes, maybe it is. But they don't know what it is, so I'm not going to say it out loud. But, but certainly you get ideas from your players when they start to wonder about things like that.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. Okay. Well, I think we've covered everything. I've covered everything that I want to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Greg? Me too. Yep, I think I'm good.
Very good. All right.
Well, Mark, since you haven't been playing for running for the last couple of weeks, what do you think of the sounds of it? I know we don't want to go like way overboard and talk about this all night, but I just wanted to know what your thoughts are on everything from what you've heard us talking about anyway.
I'm liking what I hear. It's just I've read the module ahead of time, right? So I know all the little nitty gritties and stuff, and I'm going, man, I can't believe the players have found that yet. Haven't found that. I'm going, man, I so would have done this, but I can't metagame. But from what it sounds like so far, I mean, I really like what I hear is happening. I'm a huge fan of role-playing. I mean, whether I roll dice or not, or combat, I'd rather do some skillful stuff than roll dice and do damage. Honestly, that's the way that I like to play D&D. I mean, rolling damage is fun, of course. But all in all, if you get a good DM with a good story going, you know, you could play all 12 sessions of this season and I'd be happy just doing role playing. Right. Honestly, like, this political intrigue is awesome. I think it's fantastic. But I mean, some people go out there and all they want to do is socialize and roll dice. So I mean, in
but
that.
I don't. Sorry, let me jump in for a sec. I agree. I certainly have fun when I have this kinds of adventures in a home game. But my feeling is with encounters, this is the wrong kind of adventure to have for this kind of platform. Like as an adventure you purchase and play at home, which I guess technically this is, it works. But my feeling is as an encounters showpiece that's supposed to bring people out. It so far anyway, it seems to be too much of that. Like there are other role-playing systems. If all you want to do is talk your way through everything and just do entire role-play, no dice rolling, there are other mechanics. There are other games that do that better. Not that I think this one has a problem doing it, but you've got this whole combat side of the game that we're really not using, and it's bugging me.
I agree, but I mean, what I'm hearing and what I like personally as a player is I think it would suit my needs. Now, the lack of combat I think eventually would get to me, but I wouldn't want any kind of major boss battles or anything like that. I'd rather try and undermine somebody than anything else. But these little, you know, drunken tavern brawls or, you know, stuff happening, people from Outer City or from, yeah, it's Outer City, right? Outer City, yeah. You know, do an Outer City revolt or something like that. But that's the kind of things that I would want. Something, you know, small, little tidbits here and there, like what you guys have been doing, which is great.
And I think the likelihood of that type of a situation is going to be more prominent. A possibility later on, because the idea is that the tension builds as the season progresses, right? So you wouldn't want to be like second week, whoa, there's a huge riot, because, you know, then you've already established that the tension's already at this huge breaking point.
Yeah. See, but, I find the season seems to be okay, but to your point, like you said, Derek, is that for a home game, it's probably fantastic. But encounters, you come out, you want to roll dice, you want to socialize and kill some things. And it's not satisfying that part for those players.
Yeah, that's I think that's probably my concern as well. Like personally, from my own experience, I'm really enjoying the role playing. I'm enjoying where it's going. I've been lucky to have this regular core group, so it feels like we're just playing a home game kind of situation. And most of my guys are digging it. Or as far as I know, they're all enjoying where it's going. But like you said, if you have someone who's like, okay, I want to fight something at some point, and it doesn't seem to be going that way, then it feels like, well, it's not fair to that person, right? Whereas when you have your home group, you know what jives with everyone.
And very true.
Yeah, so anyway, but yeah, interesting stuff.
Cool, yeah, no, I kind of wish I was there this season, but once again, personal things come into play, and
stupid personal life getting in the way of my role playing.
Yeah, stupid personal thing. Well, I just get to sit here and moderate it and listen to you guys have fun.
Do you think you'll be sitting at the entire season then, or are you gonna jump in at some point?
I'll probably be jumping in the last few sessions, hopefully. Well, hopefully, and yeah, you know, hopefully I can input that. I mean, at least, you know, I've read the module and I know what's going on,
yeah,
so
right.
I can jump in at any point and just kind of go with the flow.
You know, I'm curious about those for the next season for the Legacy of the Crystal Shard, because this one is clearly very geared towards being the political intrigue and a lot of role playing. A lot of this stuff is happening behind the scenes, and this stuff is happening behind a whole bunch of stuff like that, right?
Right.
I'm very curious to see what's the next one going to look like. Is it going to be a similar situation where it's going to be a very role play heavy, or are they going to change up the dynamic now?
It's set in Baldur's Gate also, right?
No. It's set in 10 towns in Icewind Dale.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's Ari Salvatore did the campaign setting one for that one.
Okay, so there's campaign setting and everything for Icewind Dales?
Yeah. It's the same format as this one, except it's like with the adventure book and the campaign setting book, except different authors, different adventure authors.
Okay, 10 Towns of Barbarians, right?
That's
where Wolfgar's from.
Yeah, it's where Wolf.
He's from north of 10 Towns.
Okay.
Barbarians, yeah, there are barbarians in that region.
Okay.
In Wolfgar was there anyway, whatever, this is the Drift's books, right? But Wolfgar was there with Brunor at the time, but anyhow, but yeah, it's the same 10 towns where they have 10 different towns,
right? On
just a clever deceptive name.
It's just quite a descriptive
screw
name.
You there's only 9 towns, ha ha.
But I mean, because it's the Legacy of the Crystal Shard, and if you've read any of the Drift's books and you know about the Crystal Shard and all that crap, I'm curious how that's going to play, because it could have especially with 10 towns and their council, I thought it could have a political type of situation, but it seems like if they're going so heavy on the political intrigue now, I would hope that it's going to be change up the theme for next season, but I guess we'll wait and see.
Very cool.
Now, you can sanction it starting this week, so for any DMs out there listening, go and sanction it, and there's a game day as well, so sanction that too.
Sounds absolutely cool. All right, gents. Well, next week I shall still moderate until I can further play. And thanks for your input, guys. It's awesome just to hear that. So it saddens my heart that I can't play, but you guys are really holding a torch.
Very good.
Well, then, until next week.
Yes. So this concludes Stage 3, Session 4 of D&D Encounters, Murder at Baldur's Gate, Season 15. Until next week.
You can follow me on Twitter at @Amaron_DM, and be sure to visit DungeonsMaster.com for original D&D 4th Edition material, including a weekly field report of my D&D Encounters experiences.
And follow me on Twitter at 20foot, and visit 20footradius.blogspot.com for your weekly dose of D&D Encounters. That's 20footradius20ftradius.blogspot.com. Until then, have a blast.